everyone, and welcome to the Creative Financing Podcast. I'm Nicole Kamanjian. I'm here with Cody Richard and the host of this show, Jeff Rappaport. This is episode 241, and today we're going to go over part two of how to determine when and how to write a creative financing offer. While listening to this episode, if you guys have questions, please head over to the Creative Financing Podcast Facebook group. If you're not part of the community, just search the Creative Financing Podcast in Facebook and ask to join. There will be a live session on the second Thursday of every month, so bring your questions. If you're watching this on YouTube, you can ask your questions in the comments below. Lastly, we want to thank you for subscribing, liking, and sharing this podcast with your friends.
All right, we're back, and we're going to continue going through putting Cody to the test here about how he is looking at leads and how he is determining how to structure offers. Cody, I was impressed.
Thank you.
You have certainly dialed things in, and you now have, this is my guess, you tell me true or not true, but you probably look at leads and you probably have you're quicker to, hey, this is where I want to go with this. And can I structure it in this way or that way? And that's what we're going to do in this episode is, all right, so we saw how you were structuring one offer. Now I'm curious if you're making multiple offers and, you know, how do they differ? What's the goal of them? How are you making them different from one another? That kind of thing. So are you up for the challenge?
Always.
All right, let's do it.
Okay. Yeah, so I'll go ahead and share my screen again here. Okay, so one thing I wanted to touch on from last time we talked about the comps and talked about looking at the sold date. I feel like now is important as ever to not go too far back on the sold date. I've been going back like a month, 2 months tops.
Yep.
Just because the market has changed so much and it's starting to go down again. So definitely keep that in mind.
I totally agree. If you're taking comps from 3-4 months ago, they're not accurate. They are potentially 5 to 10% or more too high.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, so we can go through the rest of that first lead.
Well, first of all, we didn't quite finish this one, right? So what kind of term would you have put on this?
So if it's something, so this was the one I was structuring to try to stay in the middle. So with this is typically my option two.
Okay.
And I make the term a bit longer. So I try to make this one closer to like 15 years. So I could stay in the middle for a while, make that monthly income for a consistent period of time.
Okay.
So we looked at the financial calculator. I'll get it set back to.
So is this going to be your highest price offer?
Yeah. It would be if I'm staying in the middle, it'll probably be my highest price offer because the other options I'm going to look at the cash offer, which is the easiest to make. We already looked at that a little bit.
Right.
And then one, if I'm going to just wholesale it to someone that's either wanting to be a landlord and then maybe a short-term financing offer to somebody that would want to fix it up.
Okay.
So for this one, yeah, maybe it would be option one since it's the highest.
Okay,
so I've got that all set back there. So we'll put the term at 180 months and then figure out the balloon payment. So set the period to 180 on my calculator. Figure out the future value, which is $171.38.
That's going to be the balloon that's owed at the end of 15 years if you take it all the way out.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. And then I made up the taxes of $150. Usually I'll find that from PropStream. And then put in my principal and interest, and then I'll calculate what the gross will be. Calc.
And gross will be based on if they have underlying debt.
Yeah, if they don't have underlying debt, that would be the net amount they would make. So I always take my monthly payment times 180, which is my term, plus 15,000, which is my down payment, plus my balloon of 171.038 and some change.
Yep.
So over that time, they'd make about $413,000 over the 50 years.
Yep.
And keep in mind, we're offering 280. So That's a number that could be pretty intriguing to a
Absolutely.
seller.
And I would tell you, I'd put that in bold,
Yeah.
or I'd highlight it or something. I
Yeah,
want them to notice that, right?
make
So
it size 20
there you
font.
go, right?
Yeah,
Yes. All right.
because that's, yeah, they don't
So
need that much.
let me ask you like one more question with option one.
Yeah.
And so you're doing it as an all-inclusive trust deed and note, which is a wrap, right? Title's going to transfer to the buyer. Well, title's going to transfer to you in this case, right?
Yeah.
Is this how you make most of your offers, or do you use other strategies? Why are you using this one?
I've started to do this a lot more. Contract for deed, I stopped doing as much, basically because you told me to. So you could get a little bit more control in this by getting on the title. So I've been doing a lot more of
Are
that.
you having
Subject.
pushback about that? Do people like, oh no, I don't want you to be on title.
I'd say like 10%, which is not very much.
And I'd be surprised if it's really even 10%.
Yeah, so not many people. And then I do this. I prefer this over subject to because I do want to give the buyer some recourse. This puts me in basically the same position. I feel comfortable. I'm going to make the payments and make it happen. But I'm not trying to stick the debt in somebody's name and then they lose all recourse with the house. Doesn't feel right to me, so I choose to go this route.
And so for me, subject to is fine if you're going to stay in the middle, right? Because things go bad and don't work out. I would expect that you would do the right thing. You have integrity. You're not going to hold this property while it goes down the tubes and you're ruining the seller's credit, right? The issue that I have with sub two is when you're giving it control to someone else, and we don't know if they will have the integrity to do what's best for the seller. Everything is fine when everything is working out. It's
Yeah.
when things go bad that's when all the questions come up.
For sure.
Okay. All right. So let's look at and when you're presenting offers, this is kind of after my format, right? Where I like to make multiple offers and give a seller a choice. You don't have to. You could say, here's an offer and here's a cash offer. Decide between the two. But how many offers are you typically making to a seller?
Typically 2 to 3.
Okay.
So I'll always make this one where I stay in the middle. And then I'll usually make one where it's a little bit lower price, but it's more for a landlord. And then I'll make a cash offer just in case that's something they want. Or even just to give them the example of, hey, if you want cash, it's going to be low.
Well, let me ask because first of all, can we look at what a similar offer would look like if you were planning on you would be wholesaling this to a landlord? Is that right?
Correct,
Okay.
correct.
So let's look at what that might, how that would differ from this one a little bit.
Okay, so yeah, this is all off the cuff, so feel free to give
Yeah, of
feedback.
course.
But so in this one, the seller's asking 280, so I'm going to drop the price a bit lower. In my head, the price is going to be lower, down payment, the term, everything's going to be a bit shorter, even the interest rate.
Okay.
Because I want them to take this. I want to stay in the
Yeah.
middle. I
Okay.
want to make that monthly income.
Okay.
So with this one, I'll drop it down to 265. And then this is all just arbitrary.
Yeah, no, I know you're just coming up with this right off the top of your head.
And I'll drop it down to 5,000 a month,
Okay.
or 5,000 down payment, sorry.
And what was it before? It was like 15, right?
15, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, and with this, I'm splitting the closing costs. So they're not even getting 5,000. So that's the
Yeah.
reason I'm not putting zero.
Okay.
So with this,
So they're
the three,
netting very little.
yeah. So
Okay.
260,000 is our present value. So that 265 minus our down payment. So I'm going to start with a low interest rate again, which I don't think this one worked. And then check our payment. So at 3% interest, our payment's only about $1,100, which in our example, I think we said their monthly payment was $1,200.
Yeah.
So that wouldn't work.
EITI, right?
Yeah. So I'll probably end up at 3.75 because that gets me right to 1,200, and then we'll pay taxes on top of that. But it keeps it lower. I don't want this offer to be as intriguing. If they accept it, great. I'll wholesale it. It's fine. I'll make the money on my end.
Yep.
So something that's important here that's a bit different is once I get that monthly payment, I've got to make sure that works for a landlord.
Yeah.
So that's where I go back to my comp sheet, which again, I'll share in the Creative Financing Podcast Facebook group. And so I take all this information. I put the rent over here and we'll go through the income and expenses to see about how much it'll bring in per month. So on the income side, it's just the monthly income. On the expenses side, I look at the mortgage, which is what we're playing with here.
Yep.
That about 1200. I look at the taxes, which I made up to be 150. Mm-hmm. Insurance, I estimate on this one would probably be like 100. Mm-hmm. And then repairs and maintenance. I mentioned this one needed 30,000 in repairs. So it's probably not in the best condition. I'm going to estimate it needs about 150 a month just to be conservative. And then utilities, zero. Tenants paying all their own utilities.
Yep.
So just with running that, my expenses are about 1600 per month, whereas the income is about 1700.
Yeah.
So just that alone, a landlord's not wanting to make 100 bucks a month, about a little over 1000 a year. If they're needing to pay me a down payment or if there needs to be any repairs. So I know that's not going to work.
Yeah, you could probably still even sell that property, but you're probably going to take a $10,000 to $15,000 assignment fee plus that five, right? So if someone can get in really light to something that, you know, maybe it's not a big money maker, but hey, they can hold a property, you know, at a pretty good rate, and you know, there still may be some buyers, but I would agree with you that that wouldn't be my preferred exit strategy.
Yeah, and here on my sheet, I have the cash on cash return is about 4% right now. So for me, that's their the NOI divided by their repairs that they would need to do, plus any down payment they're making to me. So let's say we take out the repairs. There's nothing they need to do at closing. There's some aesthetics, but it's fine to be a rental.
Yep.
And let's say, so I have my exit strategy down here for a landlord. Let's say they're paying me $20,000, be a $15,000 assignment.
Mm-hmm.
That cash on cash is still not great. Still about 6%.
Yep.
Like you said, somebody may want to do that, may want to hold it. But for me, I've got to make those numbers a bit better for that end buyer.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not much room to do that. So I could drop the interest to maybe 3.5, but the seller is going to be basically breaking even every month. And they may not want to do that.
What did we talk about? What was owed on this property? What was the debt?
We didn't talk about
any didn't debt. Really, right?
No, I just made up a monthly payment.
Yeah, I wonder, you know, it's different if they've got, you know, if they owe 220 on this property as opposed to 180, right, or 170, because they've got a lot more equity, and breaking even and waiting on their equity for, you know, 5 years, 10 years is, you know, it's a stretch.
Yeah, for sure.
When the equity is not that much, waiting on it, it's not as big of a deal. So that does have something to do with how we structure this, right? So good.
Yeah, and if the debt's super low, like 30,000, 40,000, I may look at a seller subordination.
Yeah.
Or going through some offer like that, which I don't do quite as often anymore or recently.
Okay. Well, and it gets harder now because interest rates, you know, so the amount of money that you want to offer the seller, you know, as part of that initial down payment needs to stay pretty low because you're going to pay more money for it right now. Mm-hmm. So when you're doing this, so in this case, this doesn't really fit with what you're trying to do. So what would you do here?
Yeah, so what I would do, since I can't really lower that monthly payment, can't really lower the interest rate, I probably just wouldn't make this offer. I don't view this as a great exit strategy. It doesn't seem like the income can make sense for that monthly. If the rent was 2,000, sure, I look at this a bit more and see how we
Yeah,
can make it work. But it's
definitely.
1,700. So that's tight. So we can finish this out for the sake of example. But if it was me, I would just close this out and just two options.
What would be, if you were to let's say what the numbers were going to work, what would be the term?
I'd probably do at least five and then stretch it out to at least ask for 10 off the start. So I'd do 120
So
months.
one would be 15 years, one might be 10. Okay. And I noticed you have in there payments to begin 60 days after closing, which probably becomes an issue for this option because after closing costs, they might have $1,500, $2,000 in closing costs. And if they've got to cover payments for 2 months after closing, they basically have $0. So, okay. And do you ever consider another exit here? So would there be another potential exit strategy, other than a landlord?
Are you talking like an owner occupant, or would I hold them? So
Maybe an owner occupant where you don't stay in the middle.
Oh, with something like this. Yeah, I don't look at that too often. I think it definitely could work with something like this if I just wanted to go through with the numbers and make this offer, because I can make a much more significant wholesale fee up front, like $30,000 or 30,000 compared to the last one. So yeah, that's a good point. Could still make this offer. It's less appealing to them, I would assume, but if they accepted it, I still make a pretty good wholesale fee up front. Or I could stay in the middle with it.
Are you getting, when you're doing this, are you getting more people to accept the offer that you want?
I would say so. Honestly, I mostly make two offers. Sometimes I'll make that third. So I make the stay in the middle, and then I make the cash offer. And most people scoff at the cash offer, which I still like to
Especially
put
on
it.
something like this, because you're nowhere near, even though they've got to be a little more realistic. I mean, you're paying top dollar if this property needs $30,000 in work, right?
Exactly.
No one
Exactly.
else is paying that much.
Yeah. And if I used to not include the cash offer when it was that much lower and I knew they wouldn't do it, but then they would ask, like, is there any
What's the
way we could
cash
do something
offer?
close to this with a cash offer? Like, no, oh no. I can check what it would be. So now I just include it in there as basically a
And I probably wouldn't even do the cash offer. I'd probably do like a short-term finance offer, like a year or 18 months or something, because I'm still thinking that the best solution might be to try to sell to a landlord. I don't even know if those numbers would work, but actually, they probably wouldn't based on even refinancing the property. So it'd have to be a rehab and, a retail kind of deal, in which case, maybe I would do 7 8 month term, and but still higher than the cash offer, just because I don't want to. The cash offer is going to be a tough one to for them to swallow, and if I can make it easier for someone to buy, that would probably make it a little better, and the seller gets a little more money.
And so just for reference, all these templates that I use for the different strategies, I have five offers in them. So a 5 year, a 10 year, a 15 year owner finance, a short term owner finance, which is like you said, the under that 1 year, and then the cash offer. And then at the bottom, I include the little blurb that explains whatever that strategy is. In this case, all inclusive trust deed note.
Good. I
It's
like
almost
it.
like that probably looks like a carbon copy of what you
That mine's changed over the years. You probably have a better explanation of what the strategy is. I used to do that. Now I don't. And we'll either explain it or we won't. And so totally fine. Usually what I try to do in the LOI is answer all the questions through the LOI, right? So
yeah,
if they understand it, then they're more apt to say, okay, I'll do this, and then we can move directly to a purchase agreement, and we can kind of take a portion, if not the whole LOI, and add it to an addendum to make it clear to the title company what's going to go on, and or attorney, and keep it very, very clear and simple. Mm-hmm. I like it.
Yeah.
So let me ask one more question, then I'll ask Nicole if she has any. Is there flexibility with these offers? So what if a seller says, well, option one is all right, but you know, I need more money down, or I need a higher monthly payment, or I don't want to go as long of a term. Is there flexibility? And if so, what do you do?
On this one, I would say there is. It's very situational.
Yep.
So what I'm starting to type right now is what my exit would be for option one. So I always have this in my head. I usually don't write it out when I'm going on to a call to negotiate with a seller. I have an idea of what I'm going to try to sell it for, how much down, and yeah, what kind of room I would have.
Yeah.
So my exit purchase price would probably be at least 310. Property's worth 300. They're getting under financing.
It might not be with $30,000 in work, depending on
what
that work
is. True.
Right?
Yeah. So if, I mean, I guess assuming it doesn't anything drastic, but even that, we can go to 300.
Yeah.
Just for the same example, down payment, let's say 30,000. So those two alone are usually the sticking points, purchase price and down payment.
Okay.
So if a seller comes back to me and says, well, I would need at least 20,000 down, I would try to negotiate back, see if we can meet in the middle at 17.5 or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, I'd be fine with that.
Okay.
Or purchase price, if they needed to come up a little bit, I'm probably a little less flexible there.
Yeah.
I may come up to 285. I may come up, I'm not going to come up to 290, but I mean, we'll talk about it, see what we can do, and try to make that work.
I think if I was in that boat where they wanted to negotiate the price, I would say, well, I was actually thinking of coming in less now that I think about it.
Yeah, very true. Yeah,
and the one thing that you got to be careful about, right, is that monthly payment. Otherwise, that really, I mean, to me, it's the down payment and payment, right, that mean the most to you, mm-hmm. and then term, right, at least in this particular case. But those are the three variables that really mean the most to you, and that's what's got to still work for it to be something that you want to pursue.
Yeah, and I'll make sure, because some people come back and they want a higher interest rate or something like that. And so that's why I also like to look at, I mean, if I'm going to have my exit, I'll make about $1,800 a month if I do 7% interest, which feels reasonable.
Yep.
But if they're telling me they want a 6% interest rate, then we won't be able to make that work. That would be too high. My monthly income may be $100. That's not really worth it.
Yep.
So I would say for negotiating, knowing your exit and knowing what you want your margins to be is really, really helpful.
Yeah.
Makes you feel more confident on the call, makes you know, okay, I'm not just shooting in the dark. I know what will work.
Yep. Very good idea. Nicole, what are you thinking? Is this helping? Is this too complicated, too simple? You already know all this, and you're ready to do the next episode. Tell me your thoughts.
I don't know about doing the next episode, Jeff. The feedback that I've gotten from you from stuff that I've asked you to look at, I still need some practice.
Well,
let's
touch on that really quick. So, Cody, did you grasp all this right away?
Nope. No shot. Wasn't even close.
No, right? That you were getting feedback, and that feedback was helping you say, oh, okay, I see what I'm trying to do. And I would tell you that, hey, yours is going to be a little different than mine. I have different exits. Maybe I'm willing to do things that you aren't willing to do. And that we're over the course of this series, we're going to see that a little bit. But I can tell you that I like what Cody does, and the offers are different enough to make a difference. But we may have different ideas of how different they need to be. Cody's more of, hey, I want you to choose a particular option. I'm more, I want you to choose any of the options. Right. So, and that may change, that may not. And if Cody's getting the offers he wants accepted, I love that idea.
Mm-hmm.
So when Nicole, when you say, some of the offers I put together, I wouldn't expect anything different. We have another student that is submitting offers, and guess what? He gets the same feedback. But, you know, as he's getting that feedback, he's making changes, and he's figuring things out. And then it becomes more of practice. Now, I'm telling you, I guarantee Cody looks at these leads now and has a direction in his mind of where he wants to go. And now it's just whether they fit, right? And he's plugging in numbers and he's playing with numbers. And it's like, hey, option two doesn't really fit. So either I got to come up with a new solution or only one option or only one creative finance option.
Yeah. And something I'd say to any new person that's looking to write offers, because when I first started doing it, I would just try to make some numbers that made sense and make it look like Jeff's. But now I do it with a lot more purpose. I have the exit strategy in mind. I try to make sure it'll work for the seller. Like, there's things in my head of these things need to work for it to make sense. Like Jeff said, he's happy if any of them get accepted. I'm fine if any of them get accepted, but there's one I'm leaning towards. So I'm going to try to make
and
that
sometimes
one.
Sometimes I do too. There's no question. Sometimes there is one that I would much rather have as well.
And it's really helpful to see this side by side when you're beginning.
Yep.
Instead of just putting these numbers out here, like, I think that'll work.
Yeah. And then when they start countering and you're like, sure. Yeah, we can do that.
It's definitely helpful because, I mean, as I don't have any questions right now and this all makes sense, I know if I actually went to go do it, I'd be like, so what do I do again?
Well, and that's so the whole point of this series. Yep.
Yeah. So this episode in the series is definitely something that you probably want to like bookmark or something on your YouTube channel so you can go back and watch it again, because I know I am.
Well, and I think we've all, right? I did when I was going through this. Cody, I know that you have, and Nicole, we've actually talked about it, is that there is a very big difference between watching me or Cody go through this and it's like, oh yeah, that makes sense, I get it, and then being able to go do it yourself. It's much, much different, right? It's like, wait, they made it look really easy. but where do I start? What do I do? And how do I decide on numbers? It's like, when I try to explain, I'm trying to do something that's going to work for the seller, still work for me, and it's going to work for my buyer. It's like, that's a lot of moving parts. And it's like, yeah, it can be. And the goal is to try to figure out how do we do that, right? And Cody's super organized. Now, I wish I was as organized as Cody, because he's got a path. I'm old school, right? You know, I have yellow pads all over my office. Rebecca keeps telling me, you know, use Google Keep. I'm like, why? I've just got these little index cards written all over the place with to-do things, and but you are, you know, you've created a spreadsheet and it keeps you on point, right? Like it tells you yes, no, maybe, rather than I'm just gonna wing it. And but I've done it long enough to know that okay, I'm okay with doing it that way, right? So, and Nicole, I'm assuming that you will be more the technologically put together, dealing with spreadsheets and things already set up for you so that you just plug in numbers and it tells you yes, no, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm liking that. Liking that Cody already started that for me. Thank you.
Yeah, sure.
Well, that was and the awesome.
Link, the link to the Facebook group, when he posts it, it's going to be in the show notes. So you guys can just click on that and ask to join, and then Cody will share it.
I'm assuming sometime. Sure, give us a good review for Cody's hard work on that one.
So, yeah.
All right. Any last questions? Because the next episode's going to be fun because we're going to Cody made that one up. Now I'm going to make one up and just give it to Cody and we'll see what he does with it. So
sounds good.
Okay. Any last words or we're good?
We're good.
All good.
All right. We'll see you soon. Go out and create some terms.